If a man wrote a very brief letter to a second-rate town in a remote corner of the Roman Empire 20 centuries ago, is it likely that there would be anything in that letter we would still find useful? Or would there be, when we read it, only a stale, musty odor, like the smell of an old trunk in the attic when you were a kid going through family relics on a long, rainy afternoon? Some of the letter I am describing, I must admit, seems irrelevant to me. It was sent to a young church at Colossae in what is now Turkey, a place where Greek philosophy and Eastern cults were being mixed together to create a new religion, full of talk about hostile forces in the upper air and the need for angelic help to overcome them, full of mysterious rituals and heavy, obscure argument. The trouble with all that is that Christianity is now and has always been an ethical religion. It cares more about how you behave than how you discuss. It is more a way of life than it is an abstract argument. Which is why the Apostle Paul, who wrote the letter, spends more time talking about practical things, about everyday conduct, than he does about Gnosticism, that highly speculative system of beliefs that had intrigued the Colossians, about which most of us know little and about which we care even less. That part of the letter is tedious. But when Paul talks about how we are to behave toward one another, the centuries fall away and he could have been writing in this morning's newspaper, especially when he comes up with a dress code, because we can relate to that, and because some of you in this room teach right now in schools that have dress codes. Paul's dress code, I must admit, is not quite the same sort that made headlines in years past at campus and Bishop Carroll and Circle High over in Towanda. But it is a kind of dress code, and that's how he describes it. He's writing to people who claim to have started a new life, but who can't seem to turn loose of the old one. So he says, once you moved among people who had no higher life at all, but now you need to strip off the old nature with its practices and put on the new. I like the word practices because it makes the point again that Christianity cares most of all about what people do day by day, about how they treat one another. So the first thing for you to do, Paul tells these new church members in Colossae, is to take off some of the old clothing. Strip away, put off things like anger, malice, slander, foul talk. Those are certainly up to date and well-known garments among us still. Pick any one and you can find it yet in style. Malice, for example, that cold, deadly form of hatred which plots incessantly and in secret to pay somebody back. Slander, that nasty little business with the poison darts that wrecks so many things, including church life. All these things, Paul says, spring from a bitter disposition, from hostility. But now you are new people, so you wear different clothing. Paul, by the way, likes this clothing metaphor. He probably knew that in the Greek mystery cults, the new member was wrapped in a sacred robe to symbolize her new condition. Changed life, different dress. There are hints that in early Christian baptism, the new convert put on a white robe as a sign of his new life. Paul would have seen the local magistrate dressed in the robes of office. He would have seen the soldier in his uniform, so it was natural to talk about a Christian as one who puts on a new self, like a robe. Except that with the Christian, it is a constant and never-ending process. Paul explained it this way one time to some of his friends in the busy port city of Corinth. Even though the outward man suffers wear and tear and is in decay, yet every single day the inward man is renewed. So to the people in the tiny village, Paul says, put on the garments that are right for God's chosen people. And then he names them. Compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience. It's a shock to some people who know how aggressive and dynamic Paul was to find him stressing what we would call the gentle virtues. I thought of them that way once, but I've discovered that they seem weak or easy only if one has never seriously tried to live by them. Then it turns out that they require more strength and endurance than any of the so-called masculine virtues. Let's look at them. For a moment, starting where Paul does, with compassion. Someone asked the other day if I had learned to insulate myself when I visit people who are hopelessly ill, or when I stay in the chapel with grieving families after a funeral. If you haven't, they say, aren't you often depressed? And the answer is yes, often. Once in a while, I've wanted to flirt with the Stoic philosophy and try to teach myself not to feel. Then I remember that if you keep yourself from sharing other people's sorrows, you can't really be a part of their happiness. The imagination isn't turned on and off at will. If you hold sorrow at bay, you hold happiness at bay. But it's a roller coaster ride. So do not weep much or laugh much, the old Stoics taught, or life will destroy you. They were right. Life does hurt, even destroy people who feel, but it destroys in another way those who don't, and they have nothing to compensate. In his famous picture of the judgment, near the end of Matthew's gospel, Jesus says the whole business of discipleship turns on one thing: compassion. He makes it absolutely clear that the damning mistake is to be in a world of need and not notice. and nothing has changed. Compassion is still part of the essential dress of the children of God. Paul's second item of clothing is kindness. And without intending a pun, kindness needs to be a habit rather than something special. Something one does almost without thinking about it because he has no other way of acting. It is a homely virtue. Homely in the British sense of belonging to the home. Commonplace. Ordinary. Everyday. Maybe that's why so much of kindness is made up of things small and trivial. I once heard a man of world reputation say in a lecture that of all the honors which had been paid to him, he remembered best an unknown Finnish woman who ran out into the street in the snow, stopped his car, and handed him a flower through the window. Her simple kindness, done in gratitude for his service to the world, was more vivid in his memory, he said, than all the honorary degrees and all the public praise. Many years ago, I heard a black man say that he could not ever be quite the same person he once was because of a simple kindness he remembered. The black section of a bus in a southern town was overcrowded, so a white Texan invited him to share his seat in the white section. The bus driver strongly objected, so the black got up. The white man stood up too, in protest, and refused to be seated while the black man stood. It never made the papers, but it was a moment of decency and kindness which changed forever how one man looked at the world. The Japanese were certainly brutal at times during World War II under the influence of a fanatical militarism. And yet in the framework of their normal social customs, they were a gentle, kindly people. One of their customs, probably vanished by now, was almost bizarre. If a person's house burned down, that person went to the nearest neighbor and gave the neighbor a present, saying, "I am so thankful that your house didn't burn down." Overdone? I suppose. And yet that spirit of kindness, pervading social life, does something rare and fine to human relationships. Before we had westernized the Japanese, it was apparently very rare to see them fight or quarrel. A missionary friend of mine told me once, "I've been there 40 years, and I haven't seen a Japanese quarreling in public. It just isn't done." Kindness was built with courtesy into the social system. And before we leave it, let's remember part of the description of the ideal woman in Proverbs. In her tongue, the writer says, is the law of kindness. That's a significant phrase. She's not kind on impulse or by accident. She has passed an inner law in the legislative room of her life so that what she says and does will automatically be kind. After all the years of preaching and trying to practice what I preach, I still need to hear what I just said. Don't you? Paul goes on with his list. Put on humility. I often wonder how many people know that Jesus taught foot washing with its lesson of humility more emphatically than he taught the Lord's Supper. I won't bore you with the proof, but if you ask for it in private, I'll gladly give it. Through the centuries, the church has stressed the sacrament of communion, but humility, underlined when Jesus bathed the dusty feet of his disciples, has often been left outside the door, replaced by power and lust for titles and honors. But some of the people who were there that night learned the lesson. Imagine a rough, boisterous fisherman like Simon Peter growing up to the point where he could say, "Don't try to rule over those who have been given into your care. All of you put on the apron of humility to serve one another." The clothing metaphor again. Put on the apron of humility. He must have been remembering that very night when Jesus girded himself with a towel and knelt at each man's feet to teach the lesson. Now, regrettably, the word humility only embarrasses some of us. We think of it as cringing or pretending something we don't feel. But humility is only making a right estimate of what we are. It is not humility to think less of ourselves than we should. Humility is simply being honest about what we are with no pretensions and in the calm and perfect recognition that every person does something better than we do, and that most of our comparisons don't really mean much. You are not fully dressed, Paul says, until you have learned to wear this garment. And then, gentleness. In the older versions, the word meek was used, but that word doesn't work anymore. It no longer translates at all what Paul meant. A manufacturer of piston rings used to advertise with the slogan, "Tough, but oh so gentle." And that is a better definition of what Paul was talking about than almost anything I know. The Greek word he used was a word used about horses that had been brought under control, still with lots of spirit, but disciplined enough to be useful. So the meek person, the gentle person, is the controlled human being who is still resilient and tough. I'm learning it still. But then, so are most of my friends. And finally, patience. The Greek word means a long temper. It's the opposite of our colorful expression, "he has a short fuse." I've spent a good deal of my life working on the short fuse problem, and I haven't won. Some of you may be with me in the confessional booth. We keep having to rediscover that the chicken is had by hatching the egg, not by smashing it. We are tempted over and over to pray, "Give me patience, God, and I want it right now." When he had finished his list, Paul spoke of the one other item that brings all the others into harmony and perfection. Above all, put on love, which ties all the rest together in perfect harmony. We've all met people who dutifully underline the word, dutifully put on all the items of dress Paul named, but somehow they never seemed to fit. They never looked quite right. Something always slightly askew. People like this may be legally almost perfect. No crooked seams, all the buttonholes in the right places, but they remain hard and suspicious of life, and they repel us instead of attracting us, no matter how hard they try. Paul knew that lying deep under all the rest, there had to be a genuine caring for other people, and that can never be faked for long. These are all very quiet, simple things. In a world devoted to what is big and strong and noisy, they must seem almost alien. But only until we learn to look closely at people's lives and see what they need most. And then, compassion and kindness and humility and gentleness and patience no longer seem old-fashioned, but very much up-to-date and essential. So while the year is still young, and you can think about what character traits you'd like to wear for the next 12 months, I remind you one more time of Paul's advice. Now, since you are chosen to represent a new kind of human being, be merciful in what you do, kindly in how you feel, humble in your thoughts about yourself. Accept life and be most patient and tolerant with one another, always ready to forgive. And above all else, be truly loving, for love is the golden chain that binds all these things together into a perfect harmony. For us, in the new year, may it be so. Amen.